I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hello, everyone. Bob Main here with the Handgun World Show, episode 49, on a beautiful spring day in North Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area to be exact. If you are tuning in to the Handgun World Show for the first time, let me let you know, this is a practical show. It's not a real technical show. We're going to have a little bit of a technical subject today in this podcast, but typically I don't tackle a whole lot of gunsmithing type of stuff, because I'm not a gunsmith, and I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not really a combat trainer. I'm just a private citizen. I'm just an average guy. I'm a Yankee with a gun, as I mentioned many times. I was born in New York City. I grew up in Wisconsin. I call Wisconsin home, but I transplanted to North Texas in 93. I just talk about personal experiences and practical info. But today, I'm going to talk about modifying your pistol. And, you know, like I said, I don't tackle these subjects too often, but there's a few things I do want to say about modifications that I think you're going to appreciate, and you'll get some ideas from it if you've been thinking about changing some things on your handgun. Okay, so before I jump into that, I want to knock out a couple of announcements. Today's April 20th, 2010, by the way. The website is handgunworld.com. I have a YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is user/handgunworldshow. Check that out. I promise, folks, I will try to this weekend get a couple of new videos posted. I've been traveling a lot for business. And also, if you're listening to this show off of iTunes, do me a favor. Go to iTunes, give me some ratings, good, bad, or indifferent. Let me know what you think of the show. If you're just downloading it off the website, there's a place for comments on the website, too. The more feedback I get, the better I can tailor this show to your needs and make it be what you want it to be, because it's your show, it's not mine. I'm just the guy behind a microphone. That's it. That's it for the announcements. I don't over-commercialize my show. Let's get right down to it, enhancing your pistol or modifying your pistol. There was a good article by Dave Spaulding on the Police One website, and I will link to this article so you can read all of it. I'm going to cover part of it, but it's very well written about modifying your pistol. I'm going to put in some of my own flavor on this because I've got some personal experiences with modifications that I'm going to share with you on this podcast. So some of this is Dave's material, and some of it's Bob Main from the Handgun World Show's material. But let me start with the premise that no handgun fits every person or every shooter the same way. That's kind of an obvious, right? You might be going, well, duh, Bob, we know that. Let me expand. Just like height and waist size of a person, the hand size and the individual finger length varies a lot. And also something I want you to consider is hand strength. I recently had a friend of mine buy a pistol for his wife. He didn't get a chance to listen to my Women in Handguns show. And he actually bought her a pistol that she was not strong enough to cock it. She couldn't rack the slide. The recoil spring was far too tough for her to do that. So he's going to have to get her a revolver instead. And sometimes that's why ladies like to get revolvers, because it depends on what kind of strength they have. Sometimes they're not able to go ahead and cock a handgun. So even that hand strength is not consistent. So really, any attempts for a manufacturer to build one gun that fits every shooter is not possible. You see a lot of them trying it. You see a lot of manufacturers putting out guns there with different back straps and things like that, which is good. Interchangeable back straps is excellent because you can tailor the size of that grip to your hand. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Okay, and those are all fine and dandy, but they don't always do the trick. They don't always make a handgun fit a person the way it's supposed to. So I want to talk about grips first of all. Okay, grips. Now, when I talk about grips, let me start with the two most popular handguns on the planet, a 1911 and a Glock. Pretty much, there's more 1911s and more Glocks out there than anything else. And since I'm on the subject of grips, let's dive into that. The Glock is It's a proven weapon. So is the 1911. Both of them have proven themselves over the years in law enforcement and military. The Glock's easy to shoot and easy to train with, but as good as it is, obviously Glocks don't fit everybody. It's one of the big negatives of Glock pistols. The good news is you can enhance the grips. And I have a Glock 19 where I've changed the grips. And I'm thinking about doing it to my second one. And I'm going to tell you what I did, and I'll tell you who did the work and everything a little bit later. I'm getting to that. But I've actually got the grip pretty much feeling like a 1911 grip. It's sweet. Okay? But if a person wants to have the grip of their Glock pistol modified, in my humble opinion, I think it's okay that you do that as long as you have it done by somebody who really, really knows what they're doing. There's a lot of people out there that specialize in grip modifications. I have personal experience with some of them. I will tell you about them a little bit later in this show. But in this article that Dave Spalding wrote, he talked about an East Coast police chief. This is the quote of this police chief. He says, "If the officer leaves my department for any reason, I now have a small grip gun that I can issue to another officer that may have small hands or small stature, and it doesn't cost me a dime. The officer who had the modification done will be more confident in their shooting ability, and here's the important part, more likely to hit what they're shooting at in any gunfight. So the way I see it, this reduces my liability, and it's a win-win situation for me." Hats off to that police chief that made that decision, because it does help you gain better control of your weapon, and if you can hit what you're shooting at a lot easier, that's fine. Now, there are good grip modifications that can be done to a Glock pistol, for example, that do not affect the reliability of the pistol at all. All you're doing is changing the outside of the grip. It doesn't have anything to do with the internals, and therefore doesn't have anything to do with the reliability. It does not compromise reliability. You know me. If you've been listening to my show long enough, you know I'm all about reliability. I have zero tolerance for handguns that malfunction. It's a pet peeve of mine. I just can't take it when they malfunction. I can tolerate a few here and there, but I can't tolerate constant malfunctions. So I'll advocate anything that doesn't compromise reliability too much. Okay? I'm not big on modifications that don't enhance the shootability of a gun, like two-tone finishes and things like that. Things that make a gun look pretty, I would say save your money on them, okay? Because a gun, why does a gun have to look pretty? It's a tool, and it's a tool you're going to defend yourself with. And of course, 90% of the time, it's probably going to be concealed anyway, unless you live in an open carry state. And I don't ever remember reading any kind of a report where a gun did a better job of stopping a bad guy because it looked good. So a lot of people like to do things to their gun to make it look cool. I would just say save your money and just change things that enhance the shootability of your pistol. Okay? So, I promised I would talk about grip modifications on Glocks and things and who does them. The grip reduction is what it's typically called, or grip modification. There's a lot of different gunsmiths out there. The ones that I'm familiar with are Robar, Bowie Tactical Concepts, GripReductions.com, and Southwest Shooting Authority. Guy named Cope Reynolds. Okay? Robar, R-O-B-A-R, Robar Companies, I think they were the first ones pretty much to start doing it, especially for law enforcement, grip modifications to a Glock. Bowie Tactical Concepts, David Bowie, he's very good. GripReductions.com, I've had Grip Reductions do two of my Glocks, one of them is my Glock 19. It's absolutely fantastic. And matter of fact, if you look at the YouTube video where I've got a video of me shooting my Glock 19 at steel targets, that's using my Grip Reduction Glock 19. He also did some nice texturing on it. I have had the opportunity to shoot a gun that was modified by Southwest Shooting Authority. And I've also had the chance to shoot one that was modified by Bowie Tactical Concepts. Both of them, absolutely fantastic. So I can personally vouch for the quality of the work by the companies I just talked about, because I've either had them work on my pistol, or I've been able to shoot a pistol with the work done by these companies. I can't vouch for any others. I only like to endorse either products that I have or that I do own or have owned. So that's what I'll say about those. Now, All of these types of grip reduction companies will work with you on the final grip configuration, but remember something. They can't read your mind, so you need to give them some guidance when you place your order. Typically, you're going to get a gun back with a straight back strap. All right. When they do the modifications, they pretty much what they do is they straighten up the back strap. They fill in the hollow cavity on the back of a Glock. Typically, they put some kind of a moly resin in there, or some kind of a resin something. I'm not sure. Being as untechnical as I am, I just know that they fill it with a lot of hard material that's just as hard as the polymer on the Glock itself. But that makes it feel very 1911-ish, and it does reshape the angle of the grip a little bit. So a lot of shooters, especially those who are used to shooting 1911s, typically love these grip reductions. You can also have the finger grooves on a Glock removed. All those are pieces of plastic on the front of the front strap of the pistol. And so basically you've got a smooth grip. Now they can texture it nicely so it doesn't slip in your hands. But it's very much a 1911 style grip. Okay? And it's about as close to a custom fit as you can get without actually traveling to a gunsmith, handing it to them, and standing next to them while they work on your gun and measuring it up in your hand while they're working on it. Typically that's not necessary if you're going to modify something like a Glock. Now Smith & Wesson M&Ps, what's really excellent about them is they ship the gun, or you get the gun with three different backstraps. So you can adjust the size of the grip just by changing out the backstrap. Fantastic feature that Smith & Wesson's offer. The full-size Smith & Wesson M&Ps, if you notice, have a little beaver tail on the tang of the grip, too. I like beaver tails. It helps in stabilizing the gun. You can have beaver tails added to Glocks. I had one added to my Glock 19. I had the grip reduction and the beaver tail added to it. All it is reshaping the grip. Doesn't compromise the reliability of the gun, not one bit. If the person knows what they're doing, it works just fine. Springfield XDs, most people typically lack the grips on those. So typically you don't have to do anything to the grip on a Springfield XD. And of course, 1911s, there's a million and one different grip panels that you can put on the side of a 1911, even wraparound grips. I mean, the possibilities are endless. So that's beautiful. That's the beautiful thing about 1911s. The grip is fantastic on those, no question. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about on grips. Now, let's talk about magazine release buttons. These seem to be a very popular change that people like to make on their pistol. It's typically a modification I don't recommend. I'll explain myself why, but if your hand is small enough that you have to change the Glock grip, if you're shooting a Glock, usually the modification of changing that Glock grip, that's going to be all you're going to need to do to be able to reach the magazine release button, because that does actually reduce the circumference of the grip. So you're typically not going to have to add an extended magazine release. Okay? And extending the mag button on any pistol, in my humble opinion, also makes it a little bit too easy to press it. Inadvertently, when you don't want to. You could accidentally eject the magazine when you don't want to. In most self-defense encounters, folks, I'm a firm believer in this. Most self-defense encounters are not going to require you to reload anyway. I know I might get some disagreements on that. Feel free to send me a comment. I'm open-minded. I love constructive criticism, but if you're carrying a pistol with 10 rounds or more in it, you know, I sure hope that the situation doesn't get to the point where you're going to have to reload. Okay? And if you do have to reload, I'm going to go ahead and assume that you're going to be able to find some kind of cover or concealment to perform your reload. So typically, again, if you've got a grip-reduced Glock or if you've got a 1911, you're probably going to be able to reach that magazine release button. Now, you'll see a lot of competitive shooters. Okay, let's talk about competitive shooters for a minute. You're going to see a lot of them flip their guns in their hands in order to get rid of a spent magazine. That's okay in competition. I don't think that's a real wise move in a combat situation where you're in a fight. Okay, and I've said this before in many shows. Competition shooters are not facing return fire. So if they drop their guns while they're trying to, you know, flip it around or flip their guns a little bit to eject a magazine, all they're going to lose if they drop their guns is their place in the match. Okay, they're probably going to lose the match, but that's all they're going to lose. They're not going to lose their life. If a citizen defending themselves, however, drops their gun in the middle of a gunfight, they could lose their life. And I'm going to stop right here for a minute and say, this is one thing, one reason why I actually advocate, in my humble opinion, I advocate adding texturing to your grip. If it's a polymer-framed gun, get it textured so it doesn't slip as much. That's a good modification, because it's going to prevent you from dropping your gun, especially if it's wet outside or if you're sweating a lot. I like 1911s with rubber grips on them that don't slip much. Skateboard tape. Any kind of gun, you can put skateboard tape on it. Put skateboard tape wherever you need to enhance your hold on that pistol. I'm a big advocate of that. And sometimes, folks, you don't have to texture your grip. Sometimes some cheap skateboard tape that it's only going to cost you less than a dollar, if you put it on there strategically and you do a good job of putting it on there, trust me, your hands are not going to slip on that pistol. I found that I can shoot more accurately when that gun's not slipping around in my hands. Common sense, right? Remember something. The loss of dexterity is going to be extremely common during the high-stress environment of a combat self-defense shooting. So trying to flip the gun in one hand in a fight could cause you a lot of problems. Also, I want you to consider something else about magazine release buttons. Think about this. Think about your handgun lying in its safe. Now, you've heard me talk in other podcasts about gun vault safes. I love the gun vault safes. Well, what you do is you lie the pistol down on the side. Now, I'm a right-hander. Okay? So, if you're a right-hander like me, you're probably going to lay that gun down in the safe on the same side as the magazine release button, because you're going to want to be able to press the combination, reach your hand in there, grab the pistol, and it's going to be laying on top of the mag button, the mag release button. Well, think about this. If the mag release button is too long, when you reach your hand inside the safe to grab your gun under stress, you may easily push down on the handgun first before you pick it up. What can easily happen, and I've seen this actually happen in competition matches, I've seen the magazine eject. Because you push down on the gun, it pushes the magazine release button, and the reason being is the mag button is protruding past the grip just a little bit. Most magazine release buttons don't extend past the circumference of the grip. And so, therefore, if you push down on your handgun when it's on a hard surface, you're probably not going to pop the magazine out. But if the magazine button protrudes outside the circumference of the grip, this could easily happen. Now, if you're a lefty, something else you might find with an extended magazine release button. If you're a lefty, sometimes those buttons can dig into your strong hand when you're shooting the gun, and that's not comfortable. So, you know, if your gun's strictly a competition gun, then I can see how an extended mag button can help you. And I practice a lot with my Glock 34 in competition. My Glock 34 has the Glock Factory extended magazine release button on it. The Glock 34 is not what's sitting in my gun vault safe next to my bed. It's my Glock 19 with the standard mag button on it. And because I don't want to be ejecting a magazine by accident. I do practice a lot on the range with my Glock 19 and my Glock 26. And they don't have the extended mag button. And the reason I practice a lot with those is that's how I carry. So if I have to reload, I want to practice reloading with the guns that don't have the extension. But if I'm tuning up for competition, like for example, I'm going to shoot the Texas State IDPA Championship coming up. June 12th, we have the Texas State IDPA Championship. I'm going to shoot that and then go on a two-week vacation. So I'm right now in the process of tuning up for that match. So I've been practicing a lot lately with my Glock 34. And it does have that extended mag release button, so that is kind of nice. If you simply have to install a longer mag release button, I'd like to highly recommend that you use the manufacturer's recommended parts to do that. Most manufacturers, if they offer an extended mag release, most of them will have their own. Okay? Now, for 1911s, Ed Brown and Wilson Combat make some excellent magazine release buttons. I like those as well. But just think about that. You know, again, what are the chances of you having to reload? If a magazine malfunctions, yeah, okay, you may have to reload. But if it doesn't malfunction, are you really going to need more? I mean, you know, my Glock with 16 rounds in it. Folks, I sure hope I'm not in that kind of a situation. That's all I'm going to say on that. All right, let me talk about slide release levers. I'm not a real big fan of those either because they have a tendency to get in the way, especially if you're using a thumbs forward grip. A lot of slide release levers, if you're using a thumbs forward grip, tend to get in the way during recoil. Now, not so much with 1911s. I like extended slide release levers on a 1911 simply because of the way the slide release lever is positioned on a 1911. They typically don't get in the way if you're using a thumbs forward grip. And a lot of shooters like to rest their strong hand thumb on the safety of a 1911 anyway. So on a 1911, switch them out, put those extended magazine or extended slide release levers on there. I think you'll be pleased with those, but just don't use them as a crutch, folks. I still advocate the slingshot method of chambering a new round after a slide lock reload. The reason I advocate the slingshot method, some call it other names for it. Basically, you just take the whole palm of your weak hand and you pull back on the slide after you've inserted a fresh magazine and let it slingshot forward into battery. It requires a lot fewer fine motor skills under stress. Typically, your fine motor skills are going to go away, especially if you're getting shot at. But if you have to put on extended slide release levers, use factory parts whenever possible. Okay, now let me talk about triggers. Everyone's favorite subject, right? Handgun triggers. Guns like Glocks, XDs, and M&Ps typically are very popular with shooters, and they have high success rates, primarily because it's fairly easy to operate the trigger, and there are no safeties that you have to disengage before you shoot the gun. But the downside is trigger control with guns like Glocks and XDs and M&Ps are going to be much more important for accurate shooting than it's going to be for a 1911. Not that 1911s don't require trigger control, but the triggers on 1911s, that smooth single-action trigger, is typically lighter and doesn't travel as far, and it's usually easier for someone to learn how to control those triggers a little bit easier on a 1911. So keep in mind, you can have great stance, you can have excellent grip, you can have perfect sight alignment, but if you jerk that trigger, the gun's going to send bullets all over the place. Concentrate on pressing the trigger, not pulling the trigger. Okay? Get the term pressing the trigger into your hand. Nice and smooth press. Now, regarding modifying the triggers, obviously the smoother the trigger, the more likely you're going to press it straight to the rear without screwing up your sight alignment, especially the front sight. And that's going to equate to more accurate shooting. But let me make a distinction here for purposes of this podcast. Don't confuse a smooth trigger with a light trigger. They're not really the same. I believe that there is such a thing as too light of a trigger, especially on a personal defense gun. And I believe you could have a trigger that's too light and you could have a jury consider that you used a hair trigger to defend yourself with. And they can use the hair trigger argument. Oh my God, this guy was a crazed maniac. He had a hair trigger on his pistol and he shot more than he needed to. That could come back to haunt you in court. I'm a firm believer. Some of you might disagree, but I'm a firm believer in that. Okay? Now, I know what some of you are going to say. Bob, the best way to keep a gun from firing an accidental discharge is always keep your finger outside the trigger guard until the gun is on target. Yes, that is true. Always keep your finger outside of the trigger guard until the gun is on target and you've decided to shoot. Yes, you do need to remain conscious of your trigger finger at all times. Okay? But if you're going to make modifications to it, here's what I'd recommend. Let me talk about Glocks first. I'll get to 1911s in a minute. The best trigger setup that I found for a Glock XD M&P type pistol. Let's talk about Glocks first. What I do on mine, I installed an overpowered trigger return spring. In other words, my trigger return spring is stronger than the factory Glock trigger return spring. The way a Glock works is it actually helps you pull the trigger if you have an overpowered trigger return spring. Therefore, in a sense, what it does is it lightens the weight of it. It also has a tendency to shorten the reset point a little bit on a Glock. So that's all I do. I know that there's competition spring kits out there. Wolf Springs makes some good competition springs. I think that Lone Wolf does too. For competition guns, fine. Change the springs, lighten the trigger, smooth the parts out. Take it to somebody that knows what they're doing to smooth all the trigger parts out. That makes it lighter. I'm going to talk about XDs and M&Ps and things like that. But be careful. I've seen people with triggers too light in a competition send rounds right over the berm and get their butts disqualified. Okay? Because they fired the gun when they didn't want to. There's even some stress in a competition match, folks. So don't go too light on the triggers, okay? Remember something, Mr. Murphy's still alive, and he's alive and well. And Murphy's going to happen when you least expect it. Murphy's Law, don't forget. So, you know, do trigger jobs at your own risk on competition pistols. On self-defense pistols, I'd leave them alone. I'm a big advocate of leaving the triggers factory. The only thing I do is change out that trigger spring. Even on my carry Glocks, I do that. I buy good quality Wolf springs, and they hold up very well. But I would leave your self-defense pistols alone. 1911s, folks, have great triggers anyway. I mean, you know, for defensive purposes, an out-of-the-box 1911, in my humble opinion, I think has a good enough trigger. Even if it's breaking at 5 pounds, it's a single-action trigger. It's going to feel lighter than a double-action trigger. Okay? Usually there's nothing wrong with a 1911 trigger, typically. Now, since I'm on the subject of 1911s, I'm going to get to XDs and MPs here in a minute. But Kimbers, Smith & Wessons, Dan Wessons, Springfields, most of them are pretty good to go right out of the box. If you can't shoot those triggers, you might need a little bit more practice. Okay? And, of course, custom guns, Wilson Combat, Ed Brown, Les Bear, those are just simply fantastic triggers. STI. STI triggers are excellent. I mean, they're just terrific. Okay? But remember, in an armed conflict, a trigger that's too light can cause you to fire rounds where you don't want to, and you are responsible for all the rounds that leave your gun. Remember that. You're responsible for all the rounds that leave your gun. And there's gun-hating attorneys out there, and there's gun-hating people that work trying to prosecute people that shoot their guns, and they don't like people like us who conceal carry and defend ourselves with a gun. So be careful that you don't give them more ammo for your case, no pun intended. Your stress level and your intensity in a self-defense shooting is going to be so high, you probably won't even notice the trigger pull anyway, folks. I'm serious. It's been reported many, many times. A lot of investigators have interviewed people who have had to fire their gun in a self-defense altercation. And a lot of times, people don't even remember pulling the trigger. They don't even remember seeing their sights. Okay? So think about that. Now, if you got a pistol with a 6 to 8 pound trigger pull, okay, that might be too heavy. If you can do something about lightening that up just a bit, fine. But even an 8 pound trigger pull, you're probably not going to worry too much about it in a self-defense situation. If you don't believe me, think about revolver shooters. There's a lot of good revolver shooters out there with smooth 6 pound double action revolver trigger pulls, and they do a great job of shooting those revolvers. Some of them will do some minor trigger jobs and loosen them up. Folks, any gun's trigger is going to loosen up after you give it the famous 1,000-round trigger job anyway. If you give it the Bob Main Handgun World Show 1,000-round trigger job, in other words, everything I'm talking about as far as modifying your trigger, please don't do any of this until you've fired your gun 1,000 times. I'm 100% serious about that. Please don't make any modifications to your trigger until you've shot your pistol 1,000 rounds. I will promise you a few things. After 1,000 rounds, your trigger is going to be smoother. It just will. You're going to break it in, and you're going to break the gun in. After 1,000 rounds, you're going to be a better shot than you were when you fired the first round. And after 1,000 rounds, you'll probably by then know what you need to do to the trigger. Some people have trigger jobs done, and they have a bunch of work done they don't even need. And some of that stuff, some of that work's very hard to reverse afterwards. So, you know, think about that. Just do the 1,000 rounds first. Okay, now my Glock 34 has the 3.5-pound trigger connector in it, which came out of the factory. That lightens it up a little bit versus a conventional Glock. Mine breaks clean at about 3 pounds, 8 ounces after changing out the trigger return spring. For me, that's good enough. It's a competition gun. That's good enough for me. My two carry guns, my two carry Glocks, my G19 and my G26, they break right around 4 pounds, 11 ounces or so. That's just perfect for a self-defense gun. My car pistols are just slightly over 5 pounds, but they're such a smooth double-action pull, those are just fine for me too. It's practice, practice, practice. Okay, now, I promised I'd talk about XDs and M&Ps. If you're going to modify the trigger on a Springfield XD or a Smith & Wesson M&P, let me stop here for a second. I forgot something. A lot of the top 1911 manufacturers like Kimber, Springfield, Smith & Wesson, and so forth, a lot of them offer trigger jobs in their custom shop. I would highly recommend, if at all possible, have the manufacturer of your gun do a trigger job for you in the custom shop. Have them do it. Couple of reasons. First of all, if it's not done correctly, it's sometimes easier to deal with the manufacturer to get them to change it. Second of all, it doesn't void the warranty of your gun. Third, if something goes wrong with the trigger, you can blame it on them. Now, there are some good independent gunsmiths out there. Some of them I have experience with. I'm going to talk about those here in just a minute. But the custom shops are usually pretty good. A lot of the manufacturers realize that they need to keep up with some of the good gunsmiths out there, so they're good at modifying triggers. If you own a Smith & Wesson M&P, let me highly recommend Dan Burwell of Burwell Gunsmithing. He does magnificent work with M&P triggers. David Bowie with Bowie Tactical Concepts also does excellent trigger work. I've had Dan do the trigger job on a Smith & Wesson M&P for me before, and it's great. And one thing I like is he doesn't change any springs, he doesn't change any parts. He just slightly modifies the parts that are already in your gun. It preserves the reliability very well. He's a very, very competent gunsmith. I highly recommend him. BurwellGunsmithing.com, and David Bowie's website is BowieTacticalConcepts.com. I'll link to both of those in the show notes. If you own a Springfield XD, I highly recommend Canyon Creek. Canyon Creek Custom. Rich Dettelhauser. I had a Springfield XD that I'm very much regretting that I sold. But he did a trigger job, and it was outstanding. Rich Dettelhauser is an Ipsic Grandmaster, and he's also a full-time gunsmith. That's CanyonCreekCustom.com. He does very good trigger jobs. Also, Springer Precision does excellent work. I think they're in Oregon. But I'll link to them, too, SpringerPrecision.com. I have actually shot a gun that was worked over by them. Very good trigger on that. Seem to be very, very reliable. So if you must mess with the trigger, follow some of the guidelines I would recommend that I just outlined in the last several minutes here. Okay, let me talk about magazine wells. Another popular modification. I'll bring this show to a close here in about 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, once again, for competition, yes, magwells are great. There's a lot of good ones out there. For a 1911, I happen to like the Smith & Alexander magwells. I used to own a Kimber, and I had a Smith & Alexander magwell on there, and it was excellent. You know one thing I like about the S&A magwells? They don't make the grip harder to conceal. The magwell is not larger than the girth of the grip. I like that. It doesn't compromise concealability. If you're in competition, if you want to be a high-level competitor in IPSC or IDPA, go ahead and put those big magazine wells on there, even if they are larger than the diameter of your grip. I mean, that's the point. Put them on there. They help you reload. They'll make your reloads faster. But it's going to make the gun much harder to conceal if it's something that you're going to carry. So for a carry gun, I don't think you're going to want to put those big fat magazine wells on there, especially if you're putting it on a big double stack gun. I mean, I've seen Glocks with those big magazine wells on there, and those grips are huge. I mean, you're going to have a harder time concealing that. But again, on a single-stack 1911, there's some real good magwells. Wilson Combat makes one called the Speed Shoot. I've seen guns with the speed shoot on them. Those are excellent. In my opinion, most of the double stack guns out there are pretty easy to reload anyway. Glocks, XDs, M&Ps, they're pretty easy to reload. Just practice your reloads. Unless you're trying to shave off a half a second or a quarter second on every reload because you're trying to get to the next level in IPSC or IDPA competition, I wouldn't mess with magwells. But if you're really trying to get to that level, put a magwell on it. Okay? Again, that's a modification that's not going to compromise the reliability of your gun. So have at it. The final point I want to make on modifications, and then I'll wrap this up. If a modification is not going to enhance the gun's performance, in other words, if it's not going to make you shoot better or do something more efficiently, don't waste your money. Okay? One thing I like about what Dave Spalding says in this article, he believes in the SIG principle, the S-I-G, not SIG as in manufacturer of a gun, but he defines the SIG principle as simple is good. Simple is good. Keep it simple and reasonable, and you're probably going to end up with a gun that's going to serve you well and help you prevail when the chips are down, when you're in a fight and you need it the most. Okay, so if you're going to have some good modifications done, let me do a quick recap before I sign off. Don't forget about grip reductions for you Glock shooters out there if you have small hands. And by the way, folks, let me say something about that. On the blog page, the main page at handgunworld.com, I'm going to repost. I did this several podcasts ago, but I'm going to repost another link to a YouTube video of a 12-year-old gun at Tactical Response, an excellent training school. 12-year-old girl, excuse me. Did I say 12-year-old gun? A 12-year-old girl at Tactical Response handling a full-size Glock, and she did just fine. If a 12-year-old girl can handle a full-size Glock, you can too. But if you have to modify the grip, then go ahead and modify it. Have a reputable gunsmith, like we talked about, do it. And add some skateboard tape and add some different grip panels if it's a 1911. And do whatever it's going to take to help you maintain a good firm grip on that pistol. In recapping on triggers, I do recommend changing out the trigger return spring on a Glock. Make sure you use a good quality one. Wolf gun springs are excellent. Have Springer Precision or Canyon Creek Custom work on your XDs and have Dan Burwell or Dave Bowie work on your M&Ps. You'll be happy with those. Again, just leave the carry guns alone, folks. Just leave the carry guns alone. Put magwells on there if you're going to compete with it. I wouldn't put one on if you're going to conceal, unless you're a 1911 shooter and you're putting one of those cool SNA magwells on it. With all that said, folks, I want to say something. And that is a big thank you for tuning in to episode number 41 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. I like what I read on the internet the other day. When seconds count, a cop is minutes away. That's why I carry a gun. Thanks for tuning in to episode 49. Catch you next time. Bye-bye. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.